Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on November 14th, 2022. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded, and we do place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share some few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone who's joined through the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, you can click on the raise hand icon that will raise and or lower your virtual hands. We do appreciate one speaker at a time. It helps any external noise or over speaking. So thank you for keeping that in mind. We also have two ASL interpreters with us on this call, on this meeting. Therefore, I would request everyone to please state your name before speaking. It helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at that time. Chair Kalabia, would you like to do the approval of meeting agendas first, or would you like to do that afterwards?
Let's do it now, because that should be quick.
Okay, so I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda for everyone. And after that, I can go and go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members. Let's see if I can perhaps share my screen so that everyone who can see is able to read the agenda as well. Excuse me. I hope my screen is visible at this point.
Yes, I can see.
Thank you. So I would read the agenda, and after that, we would go through the roll call of the committee members. At 4:05, Chair Kalabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We do have Michael Anzalo, Vice President and Chief of Police with us during this meeting. So he would have the time at 4:10. At 4:45, we have Paul Bumbry. He would speak about written communications and rail stations. At 5:05, the committee will discuss Fairgate recommendations. At 5:30, we will have ombudsman report. And at 5:45, we would have public comment section. And the meeting is scheduled to be adjourned at 6 p.m. At this point, I would stop sharing my screen. I would go through the roll call of the committee members. Please confirm your presence when I call out your name. Azar Atura. Darnese Bush. Tino Kalabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Yes, I'm present.
Thank you. Tuan Farmer. Deborah Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you.
See me on the screen.
I'm sorry, Marcy.
Yes, I can see you on the screen.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Because I can't find me.
Sorry about that, Anu. I just came on when you called my name. Tawan Farmer, present.
Perfect. I would mark you. Thank you. Present. Timothy Caffin. Excuse me, Timothy Howard. Apologize. Steve Caffin is on travel. He had informed us before. Thomas Mangrum. Thank you. Philippa Mazel. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonov.
Present.
Thank you. Philip Weintraub. Okay, Chair Calabria, that concludes the roster for today's Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting. I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, we have the police chief with us, so let's hear his presentation and then have our discussion. Police chief, it's your turn.
Okay, thank you, sir. Good afternoon, everybody. Just wanted to report out on where we are as far as crime on Metro Rail, bus, Metro Access. So for this year, we are up slightly compared to crime last year. Our aggravated assaults are up by 9%. Our robberies are up by 6%. What's really driving most of our crime is theft. We get a lot of stolen bicycles and motorized scooters. People that bring it to Metro, leave it, in a bike rack or unsecured, then it does get stolen. Our indecent exposures for this year are down 6%. So that's trending in the right direction. And, I don't want to belabor too much about crime, but our crime rate is actually down, even though our static numbers are up. But our crime rate, what we look at is by per million rides. So our crime rate is actually lower this year than it was at this time last year. This time last year, we were averaging 6.4 crimes per million rides. And at this time this year, we're averaging 5.7 crimes per million rides. And then when we look at particularly, with customers that have access issues, our crimes for last year, we had 4 on rail, bus, and Metro Access. And at this year, again, we have 4. The crimes last year...
Chief, what are those 4 incidents?
Yeah, okay. So last year, we had 1 fondling, 1 indecent exposure, and 2 simple assaults. And then this year, we have 2 indecent exposures, 1 obscene sexual display, and 1 simple assault.
Okay, thank you.
And then as far as our fare evasion enforcement, I know that was a topic that was brought up. So I think everybody's familiar. The District of Columbia decriminalized before 2019, fare evasion was a criminal offense in the District of Columbia. The DC City Council voted to decriminalize it and make it a civil offense. So we've started enforcing fare evasion here in the District of Columbia, as well as in Maryland and Virginia again. And we started it November 1st. We had a month-long campaign just advising folks that we were gonna start doing the enforcement. I think it was publicized, at least I saw, in newspapers and some of the local television stations. And then we had an active campaign with police officers out in the rail system and on bus as well. Informing folks. We handed out small flyers, informing folks that, fare evasion, would be enforced. It is illegal. The people that did fare evade could face civil, penalties and possible criminal penalties. So we started that November 1st. To date, we've only had 2 arrests. The way we're doing it with a number of police officers, about 6 to 8 at a time. That tactic is so that, we want compliance rather than enforcement. So generally we've turned away over 1,000 folks that normally would have probably fare evaded. However, they chose not to and, left the system. And we've issued over 35 citations. reference to the efforts. Now, this is an ongoing process. So, you know, we expect to, you know, our goal is to get compliance, you know, with folks paying their fares. And we're also trying to educate folks that we do have certain programs within Metro that, you know, people can apply for and then either get a reduced fare or, you know, some sort of financial accommodation. So we're trying to push that out as well. And I'd be glad to you know, answer any questions anybody, you know, had.
Sure. You mentioned that there were 35 citations after you began trying to deal with fare evasion on November 1st. Which jurisdictions, do you have figures on which jurisdictions those fare evasion citations have happened?
Yeah, so I don't have the cumulative total, but we've operated in all three, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. We have not issued any citations in the District of Columbia. In the District of Columbia, we've sort of taken a different tack because the way the law is currently written, a person doesn't have to comply with the citation. They can just keep walking by. The police department, we have no legal authority to stop that person. But what we can do is refuse them service. So person fare evades, we stop them. We tell them that they have to turn around and leave and pay. And at that point, if they don't leave, then they'll be issued the civil citation and they're also subject to arrest.
It's still possible to cite them for criminal offense in Maryland and Virginia?
Yes, yes. Maryland and Virginia, their laws have not changed. They'd still, you know, if the person doesn't cooperate with the citation, they can be cited for a criminal offense.
Yeah. Well, basically, we invited you because, and I think we shared the stats with you from the Justice Department on crimes nationally. And with respect to crimes against people with disabilities, there was a disproportionate number of crimes against people with disabilities. And these happened also in DC, not just throughout the country and other places. So we're hoping that the kind of monitoring and, well, basically police presence that you are enhancing will help stem crimes of all kinds, but certainly to those of us who are senior citizens or people with disabilities, because we bear such a heavy burden of such crimes. Do you have any data on the kinds of victims of crimes that have happened in recent years? Or
I did not bring that with me, the victimology for the recent years. But like I said, you know, our crime statistics, if you look at crime over the last 5 years, comparing it to this year, we're actually down about 32%. Now that factors in the pandemic and, you know, pre-pandemic. And of course our ridership on bus and rail and Metro access isn't quite what it was pre-pandemic yet. So it's kind of hard to get a good gauge on what our crime picture actually looks like coming out of the pandemic.
With respect to police presence and visibility, you've instituted, I think, measure that calls for unarmed but uniformed monitors or code enforcers. This has been done in several jurisdictions around the U.S., and I sent out to our membership articles with pictures of unarmed code enforcers in San Diego and in the BART area. How are we doing that now?
We don't actually have that here at Metro. So the visibility that folks are seeing out at Metro are the uniformed police officers. And we have an operation called Helping Hands. And you'll see more officers out on rail and bus in particular through this, this deployment that we're doing. And the officers are basically walking through the train cars, hitting the buses and the bus bays. Now, the programs that you've talked about, that has been discussed here at Metro, but that is not in place as of today.
Is there any thought of doing so? The other jurisdictions have done it, and the presence of these people will help make visible the police presence, even though these people may be unarmed.
That is true. And that's what the senior leadership here at Metro has been discussing, a program just like that. But you asked me if it was in place, and it is not in place right now.
Well, perhaps we in the advisory committee might urge that more be done in this regard. And in any event, let me ask other members now. Do you have questions or comments?
Chair Calabia, this is Anil. We do have three hands up. First is Denise Rush. Second is Phil Posner. Third is Sandy Newsom. So Ms. Rush, go ahead, please.
This is Denise Rush. My question is, I'm not quite understanding the categories that you have read of the crime, because how do you label a person? Well, a news report says a lady is entering the Metro station, and before she can get on the escalator, she's robbed of her pocketbook and kind of pushed down the escalated stairs. Someone's found dead on the bus. That possibly they got ill and died on the bus. People are, a lady was pushed off the bus by kids. Some were arrested. And I guess that's an open case. But I'm trying to understand some of the reports that we hear on the news, which they don't have to be gospel, but they're serious offenses, and or someone got stabbed on the bus or stabbed on the Metro. Those categories I didn't quite hear.
Yeah, so what we do is we do uniform crime reporting. So like what you talked about, like the woman that was assaulted on the bus and pushed off the bus. So there are eight people involved with that case, and all eight have been arrested. Some were juveniles, two were adults. And then, like, if it's a stabbing or something like that, where the person doesn't die, obviously, if a person dies as a result of an assault, that's classified as a murder. But where somebody is stabbed on the bus and doesn't necessarily die, that's classified as an aggravated assault. And so those are uniform crime reporting that we do to the FBI. And, most police departments across the country report on those categories. So we won't call it out as a stabbing, but an aggravated assault is what it's actually classified as. I don't know if that helps, what you're talking about. Now, if a person dies of a medical event or something other than a criminal act, that's counted as a death investigation. And that's, that takes on a different investigation with the police, the medical examiner's office, obviously.
Now, it seems like every week we hear someone has gotten robbed, someone has been assaulted, someone has done something at such and such a Metro on the train. But you're saying that the crime rate is down.
It is. So when you look at the number of crimes that we have, this year, and we base it on rides. So if you look at, Maryland, D.C., or Virginia, what they base it on is 100,000 residents. And that's how you come up with your crime rate. So you take your crime rate divided by your number of residents that you have. Well, on transportation, our crime, you know, if you look at it per million rides, you know, that's not riders, that's just per million rides is what we look at. If you look at it like that in a population sort of context like that, yeah, the crime is actually down this year as compared to last year because our ridership has increased and crime has remained relatively steady. I mean, I think all crimes are horrible. I'd like to have zero crimes, you know, period, where no one is the victim of a crime. But, you know, the reality is, you know, we do have crimes that occur on Metro. And some are robberies, some are, like you pointed out, an assault or a stabbing or something like that. We do get those. But we don't get, you know, if you look at it comparatively across the region, we don't get as much as you would say, you know, outside of transportation.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. Next is Phil Posner. Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Just a comment about fare evasion. My experience, I have had a number of instances at Gallery Place and Capital South and other regions where the fare evaders are school students who think it's really cool to jump over the fare gate. And when I've stopped them, I've tried to explain to them that it's not that they're cheating Metro out of the money, it's just that the funding of WMATA comes from the count of the number of rides. Because most of these youngsters, when I talk to them, have a free ride because the school system provides them with free rides. And so my feeling is a better system of education to the school students to let them know that they're really damaging the system by doing something cool, like vaulting over a fare gate. They're not really stealing any money because they get a free ride by being a student in that jurisdiction. So I think some education might go a long way in cutting off some of the youngsters coming out of school at the same time and trying to be cool.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And that's something that we try to do. We have, in the police department, we have a community services bureau that does youth outreach, and we have officers that work with the school officials on the Kids Ride Free program. Obviously, you know, we try to, you know, through the fare enforcement, obviously, you know, we're not locking up kids going to and from school. But when they do, like you described, vault the fare gate or something like that, we will stop them, have a conversation with them, tell them about the Kids Ride Free. But obviously, you know, we can't touch, you know, everybody that enters the system. And I think you're right. It's a bigger conversation, more of a, you know, an education type thing with the schools. And, you know, we've actually made some pretty good inroads with DC public schools and the charter schools. And we're trying to do the same in Maryland and Virginia as well.
Thank you.
Well, some relates to an engineering problem. The fare gates that we have now are easy to mount over. There are fare gates elsewhere which are engineered in such a way that getting through them or mounting them would be impossible. I wonder if, Anu, you could bring up a couple of the pictures that I've sent you regarding this. Can you bring that up on your screen?
Yes. Give me one quick moment, Chair Kalabi, and I'll share my screen. You would like me to share the screen with the two pictures that you had shared, correct?
Yes, of okay. Fair Gates.
Fair Gates? Absolutely. One moment. Okay. I think you can see my screen now.
Yes, there's... Okay. There's one, and there's a different view of the same kind of fare gate, which would make it really, really difficult for anyone to mount over the fare gate.
This is the second picture, yes.
Sure. So, Chief, why don't we do something about having these kind of fare gates, which make it very difficult, if not impossible, for adults or even youngsters to mount over?
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you brought this up. So Mr. Clark, our general manager, he is looking at this, you know, this configuration with our fare gates to make it more difficult. Because quite frankly, you know, fare evasion, I know some of you are longtime residents here in the Washington, D.C. area. In 1976, you know, fare evasion was a problem, you know, and it continues to this day. So, yeah, Mr. Clark is definitely looking at the configuration of the fare gates to make it more difficult for somebody to, you know, hop the gate like they currently do now. And I think that's the right approach, is to, one, education, two, enforcement, but three, really, is to reconfigure the way the fare gates are at the stations.
Well, Chief, if you could pass on the message to GM Clark, that we in the advisory committee, in discussion with you, are encouraging adoption of better fare gates that would preclude fare evasion by physically mounting over the kind of gates we have now.
You know, I'll point out to you that young kids looking for fun just slide under those gates or dive through the bottom one and the top one. And so people looking for fun, those are not going to stop them from doing that. I've seen them do it.
Well, there are other kinds of fare gates besides the ones, the pictures that I show. And our, I'm sure our procurement office should be able to identify where they are and how to get them. Next question, please.
So actually, Dr. Posner had his hand up, followed by Sandy Newsel.
This is Sandy Newsel. I'm going to describe a situation and then ask a couple questions. On Thursday, I was on Metro, and between Ballston and East Falls Church, two people, a male and a female, were yelling at each other. And I mean, really, really aggressively yelling. The woman was louder than the man. Loud enough to make me concerned. I have low vision. They were far enough away. I could not see them. I certainly could hear them. I looked around the passengers sitting closest to me. Nobody was taking any notice. So my questions are, is that a crime to be yelling on the a Metro car? And what should a passenger such as myself, who felt threatened by this situation, do?
Now, that's a really good question. So when you say, is it a crime, it just depends. Like, disorderly conduct within Metro is against our tariff. And we can, you know, we can ask that person to leave. And if they refuse to leave, then they can be locked up for trespassing. You know, unfortunately, the other passengers, you know, on the Metro car, you know, obviously, you know, from what you stated, didn't do anything or pay them any mind. There are buttons, and I think you've seen them in the rail cars, where you can get the operator's attention. You press that button and tell them, you know, that you're having a problem in the car, then they in turn will notify the police department, and then, you know, we'll get there, and we'll, as long as, you know, we get there in a timely fashion, that we can intervene and, you know, pull those people off the car.
So I did actually get up and walk away from these people in hopes that I would see one of those buttons, but I didn't. So is there a see something, say something, phone number I could call immediately on my cell phone?
There is. So if you can text or call, the text is MyMTPD. And then our number is 202-962-2121.
Okay, thank you. I'm gonna put that in my cell phone.
Okay. Sorry that happened to you.
Thank you, Next. Sandy. Next would be Debbie and then Kelly.
Hi, I'm Debbie Fisher, and thank you for coming. I have an adjacent kind of a question to ask. There was information shared in September that mental health crisis counselors would be coming on board to assist with particularly the homeless, chronically mentally ill, substance abusing, people who often spend a lot of time in Metro. And so my question is that happening? And in a situation like the one that Sandy just described, are those people available to assist? And my reason for asking is I particularly am concerned because we are at the moment really committed to training people with developmental disabilities to use the bus and rail system. And it is those kinds of situations, as much as crime, that families and people themselves find threatening. And so I was hopeful that these people would be there, but wondering what the status is, and are they also trained to work with this other population?
Yeah, so the answer to that is yes. So we have completed our interviews for the individuals, and we are now in the hiring process. Initially, we're gonna hire 4 individuals to work with the public and us, the police department. And yes, they will be trained in assisting people with different types of disabilities, particularly mental disabilities as well. So we do a lot with the Department of Behavioral Health here in the district. Mm-hmm. The DC government was gracious enough to sit on our interview panels. The director of the Department of Behavioral Health sat on it with us so we could we're looking for licensed social workers is what we're looking for in order to connect people to the services that we think they need and to intervene in any type of acute crisis they may be having. So I hopefully all goes well with the vetting process because, we do have to conduct a background investigation, obviously. And I hope to have them on board by, the first part of December.
That's great. I would encourage you. I believe some of, if not all of your officers have been trained in whether it's the Ethan Saylor training or an equivalent kind of training. But I'm hopeful that because all social workers who do even crisis management are not necessarily trained to work with that population, and those become risks to that population. And I just want to make sure that all the full range of disabilities population their needs are being addressed when you bring new people in to do this work.
No, and that's a good point. And, we are trying to address that, so we do at least encompass as much as possible, the full range of disabilities that, we'll use Metro.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Debbie. Chair Calabia, next would be Kelly, followed by Doris Ray, and then Vanessa Coles. So Kelly, go ahead.
You're muted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chief. I had a question related to sexual assaults that I guess this isn't technically bus and rail, but while you're here today, is what the police are doing related to concerns when there's been a report of a sexual assault by a WMATA employee to a paratransit customer.
I WMATA employee. I'm trying to follow your question. So a paratransit customer was sexually assaulted?
Yeah, what steps and what kind of, just sexual assault training is being done, like from the police force to WMATA related to actual events of, you know, if an employee has been found to sexually assault a paratransit customer.
All right, so you're talking, what do the police, I'm trying to follow your question. So what the police provide WMATA employees as far as reporting
what, I guess my question is, what is WMATA's police role when there has been a situation where a employee has been found to sexually assault a person on paratransit?
Yep. No, I got
you. Are you called in? Or
yeah, we are. Yeah, we are. And what we do is we follow the local jurisdiction's processes. Like here in the District of Columbia, obviously, if the person's a victim of sexual assault, here, you know, obviously the police will be involved, as well as nurse practitioners with the same program, as well as the advocates here in the District of Columbia around sexual assault. So we follow the jurisdictional practices, but they're investigated, you know, criminally, obviously, and, you know, we try to collect as much evidence as we can. If there are special needs or anything like that, we make arrangements with the local prosecutors to best course of, you know, getting that person interviewed and getting their account down. And then, you know, obviously sometimes we'll make an on-scene arrest, or if it's not quite clear and there's more investigation that needs to be done, then we'll apply for an arrest warrant in the local jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I just do a quick follow-up, actually? This is Kelly Simo again. Are you finding that, or does the WMATA police force do any type of training assistance with WMATA related to like sexual assault and sexual harassment policies of employees, either towards one another or towards the consumers?
Yeah, sexual harassment, you know, and sexual assault. I mean, the sexual assault is, you know, once they're aware of it, you need to report it immediately to the police because, you know, in those types of cases, as you well know, you know, time is of the essence. And we do like to get those reports timely. Now, as far as harassment, that sort of thing, WMATA has a whole program that goes over what constitutes sexual harassment internally with employees, you know, behavior that's not satisfactory towards customers or anything like that. So we do do that. We don't, the police department doesn't do the harassment part of it. That's more of an HR function here within the model.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. Next would be Doris Ray and then Vanessa Coates.
Thank you for coming to the meeting. And I wanted to ask a couple of questions. I, for my job, I'm a blind woman, and for my job, I frequently have evening meetings, and I'm using the subway to actually Metro bus and the subway to transport back from those meetings into I live and work in Northern Virginia, into a place like Arlington where I can pick up a bus back out to where I live. So what I was wondering is, there's been a lot about crimes that have been have taken place in the evening on Metro cars that were you know, basically nobody was on the trains or very few people were on the trains. And or in the stations, for that matter, and that's my experience. Like when I'm in Vienna waiting for a train at 10 or 11 at night, it's sometimes it's kind of scary. And then you get on the train, and when somebody gets on, there are only a few people, and some of the instances that were described earlier can happen. So I want to express first that I have, as much as I ride the train and the bus, you know, 5-7 times a week, or I have never found any phone or any button or anything. And when you get, you know, when you're in a concerning situation, it's much harder to, you know, go looking for something like that when you're concerned about what might be happening on the train. And if you got off the train en route at an outdoor station, you might be in a worse situation than you were being on the train. So, and in the stations, I've never found one of those emergency phones. And being someone who doesn't always have a cell phone with them, I'm wondering what we're doing in the system to ensure there's some redundancy for people who don't have cell phones, can't send a text, and also whether there's a difference in terms of evening patrolling stations between inner core stations versus the suburban stations where something could well take place because nobody's around. The last question is, what responsibility do we take at bus bays, at stations in the evening? Is there any patrolling of stations? Because, you know, if you're out at 10 or something at night at a station like West Falls Church or Vienna, where there are a lot of bus bays and often very few people around, there have been incidences reported about people walking out of the station and needing to get into their neighborhoods, and that's where they're accosted, is on the grounds of the metro station, walking, trying to get out of Vienna Station or like West Falls Church.
Yeah, so in reference to your concerns and your question, so yeah, there are, you can notify the operator. I know you said you haven't found the buttons, but when you're on the platform in a station,
you can't find the thing. I think there needs to be some consideration about where they're placed and how they're signed.
Yeah, and you know, and I appreciate that, and that's something, you know, I can definitely look at, but. You know, the one thing too is if you do have an uneasy feeling, I mean, you know, there's a station manager on duty or the bus operator. And the other thing you can do too, late at night, you know, if you get on that first rail car where the operator is, that's also, you know, a suggestion that you may, you know, want to consider, you know, when traveling late at night. Same thing with the bus, you know, if you sit, you know.
But it's for work though.
I'm sorry?
It's for work.
Right, I know you're traveling late at night, right?
So I'm just saying some people can't avoid it.
No, I understand that. So that's why I'm suggesting, you know, and we do publish that, you know, you can contact the station manager, you can contact, you know, us, the police department, or, you know, one of the places to ride is on that first rail car, you know, where the operator sits. You know, there are buttons on either end of the platform. I mean, I hear your concern. I mean, that's something that, you know, we could obviously reevaluate. And as far as the buttons in the train cars, they are there. Maybe they need to be more conspicuous that you can get in contact with the operator. But that's something, you know, I can obviously take a look at.
Next.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Vanessa, followed by Rico Dancy, and then Thomas Mangram. So Vanessa, go ahead.
Okay, I'm on my cell phone. I was not able to unmute myself on the computer. But I'm going to go back to the jumping. So should an individual jump the gate and fall and injure themselves or injure someone else, push into them, knock them, would they be able to sue WMATA or even the person that they knock into? Just curious.
I'm not a lawyer, so I couldn't give you any type of legal advice. But my experience, I retired from the D.C. police and came over here about 5 years ago. My experience is, if you're committing a crime, then you know you can't sue, you know, the other person, and if they mm-hmm. if they had knocked down the person that while they were committing the crime, then they could be charged with assault or something like that. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer. Obviously,
you know, well, I was just curious because it seemed like to me their foot can get stuck and, you know, they rushing and jumping and it's other people around. So somebody is like to get hurt.
No, and that's a good point. I mean, you know, besides, you know, the act itself, you're right. Other people could get hurt. And that's a very real concern.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And next would be Rico Dempsey. Rico, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes. So my question is, if you're on the bus or the train and there are people playing like loud music on the bus or the train, what's the policy on that? What can we do about that?
Yeah, it's against our tariff here at WMATA. So you can be cited for that. And, you know, you could also, if you fail to comply with that, you can be asked to leave the bus or the train. And if you fail to leave, then you can be arrested.
Next question.
Okay, next would be Thomas Mangrum. Thomas, go ahead.
I was just curious because yesterday Rico was still speaking.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Thomas, I'm sorry, this is Zanu. I believe Rico still has follow-up questions.
Okay.
Yesterday, I was on the bus and there was a man and a woman playing really loud music. And I told the bus driver about it. And the bus driver just said, okay.
No, that's not acceptable. So
I didn't know if there was a policy or if there was something I could do.
There is, yeah. No, you did the right thing by reporting it to the bus operator. The bus operator should in turn call the police and we would have handled it. So I apologize that that happened to you, but that's not the way it should have been handled.
All right. Thank you so much. I just wanted to know what to do next time.
Okay. Well, thank you for reporting that. I appreciate that.
Thomas.
Okay. Thank you. My thing is with the buses. Two times before, almost got stabbed one time. Almost got hit on in the face one time. Some years ago on the bus, and it was all on the X bus line. Mm. Uh-huh. You shake your head, you know about that.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, when y'all talking about emergency buttons, is there emergency buttons on the bus?
Not on the bus. It's best to get the operator's attention if you can. And that's how we get notified. They have a button. They will push to notify the police.
But the times that these things happen, I'm a wheelchair user, so I'm totally dependent on the operator. Letting me off the bus if something like that happened. But both times, the bus driver left me.
The bus driver jumped
off the bus. I'm still on the bus, and I'm trying to duck knives or somebody punching. They wasn't trying to hit me. They was fighting each other.
Right.
But I'm sitting on the front of the bus, and they fighting right there. And I almost got stabbed, almost got punched. And everybody else got off the bus, and the ones that were still on the bus, they was ignoring the fight. So when you're a wheelchair user, is there any protection for us? Because a lot of times, the drivers, they leave us.
Yeah, that's, you know, sir, that's something I'm going to have to bring up with bus and their leadership, because that shouldn't happen. They should at least try to get you off the bus and get you out of harm's way. And that's something I will take back to them. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Two separate times.
Yeah, I'm sorry that did happen. Yeah, I mean, that is a very dangerous concern that you have. You know, I will take that back to the bus leadership, your specific, you know, concern and situation, and you know, relay that to them, because I'm sure there's other people that are similarly situated that have the same concern that you have.
Right. And I think with certain bus routes, you should have a Metro Police officer on them.
We are
especially with the X bus.
Yep.
That X bus is really dangerous at times.
It can be. Mm-hmm. You know, but we do. So, you know, we're going through like what a lot of police departments are doing. We had a hard time getting officers over the last few years, but our recruiting has actually gotten better. So with our hiring more police officers, we've reinstituted our bus unit. So there will be more police officers out on the bus.
Okay. Thank you.
No, thank you, sir. Thanks for bringing that up to me.
In that regard, Chief, is there any kind of video monitoring that can take a record of this?
There is. So all the buses are equipped with video as well as audio. So the one thing that, you know, alluded to a bit earlier in reference to the assault on the bus where the woman got pushed off the bus, due to that video, we were able to identify all 8 individuals involved and obtain arrest warrants for them. So, you know, even though people do these assaultive behaviors, doesn't help you necessarily in the time being that it's occurring, but from an investigative standpoint, that video and audio is crucial to us. And that's why we're able to, you know, make arrests in, you know, a lot of these violent cases.
So in the case that Thomas Mangrum described, doesn't the driver or the operator or somebody who must have noticed the situation, doesn't anybody monitor what these video records will show?
Yeah, well, his particular instance, I don't know when it occurred, or he said it happened, you know, several years ago. But currently, if that happens, then yes, the bus video, we get that. We get it downloaded. The operator hits a button to notify their communication to, in turn, send the police. And we pull that video off the bus to use in our investigation if we haven't made an arrest on the scene.
I think Kelly had a follow-up question. Kelly?
Oh, I was just making a comment, but I think that that scenario described, when you have a person who, where WMATA has a policy where they're requiring you to be restrained on a bus, whether or not the person who uses a mobility device likes that or not, you know, the bus drivers, you know, are saying that they're required in order to take you on a ride, but in the middle of a violent event, for a person who is then restrained to be abandoned during that violent event, just seems beyond, you know, a horrible situation. And I would like WMATA to investigate this further and then follow up with us, because we can't have policies where wheelchair users are forced to be restrained and then they're also left in the middle of a violent event.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent point that both of you brought up. So, I mean, I'm going to take this back to the bus leadership and, you know, discuss it with them. I'm not a transportation expert, so I don't know all the, you know, the ins and outs of that. But, you know, from a police perspective, yeah, I think it's a bad situation to be in.
Ms. Simonal, this is Carol Lopez. Bus operators are required to ask you if you want to be restrained. Are you saying that they're forcing people who use wheelchairs to be restrained?
Yes, all the time, all the time. I mean, that can be a different discussion, but I can speak from personal experience as well as collecting stories from others that it is not given as an option. Now, if you're a person, you know, like myself or others that may have, you know, more understanding of policies, procedures, and rights, then maybe you would stand up to that bus driver. But then you're always, you know, running the risk of, will they stop when I need them to stop? Will they let me on if it's a busy day? If you're trying to, you know, go back against a driver, there, you know, there could be other issues related to that. But yes, there is many, many, many times, and you can survey that, even send out a survey and maybe collect data to see how often is a person given the option versus being forced to be restrained on a bus. Regardless of that situation, even if I wasn't forced to be restrained, if I was let off and they didn't engage the ramp to let me off, that would be, in my mind, being restrained as well. If I didn't have the ramp engaged, that's a equivalent of being, you know, tied down as well. So in that situation, I think regardless, it's a very, very dangerous. But to your point, yes, they are requiring it all the time. And perhaps we should do a survey of users to see what their experiences are with that.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
This is Anu Chair Kalabia. We do not have anyone else's hand up at this point.
Okay, well, thank you, Chief. And I hope you'll bring back to the leadership of WMATA the need for involving unarmed, uniformed help that can supplement your police officers and provide a visible presence, because this really such a large system can't have police or unarmed assistance. But the more that there are and the more they're available to be seen, then perhaps more people will be discouraged from these kind of infractions. But thank you very much for coming to talk to us, and I hope you'll let us know what happens with respect to further assistance that you may get in terms of unarmed code enforcement.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you. It was an honor to come, and appreciate you letting me answer questions and address the group here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Okay.
Chair Kalabia, this is Anu. The next topic is about written communications within Metro Rail stations, and we do have Paul Bumby to speak about that.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me to talk about the whiteboard project. My name is Paul Bumby. I'm currently the superintendent of a department by the name of Rail Infrastructure Support Services, RIS. I've only been in this position for 11 months, but I've been with the authority for nearly 18 years. Anu contacted me on October the 14th and made me aware of a program that was implemented several years ago, the whiteboards, where whiteboards were purchased and distributed to each kiosk in the event a station manager encountered a customer who was deaf or hard of hearing or a person that was unable to speak. This board was, I guess, designed to help the communication in that particular situation.
Right.
Essentially, from the time that Ms. Sharma contacted me, I've been doing internal research. I started with internal risk staff. I've spoken with station managers, utility station supervisors, rail transportation management, the rail training department, and we've also actually reached out to my predecessor, Mr. Donald Goings. Unfortunately, it appears that the boards were put in place 4 to 5 years ago. And in polling some of the tenured station managers, they were aware of it, but absolutely none of the newer station managers were aware. The tenured station managers did report stating that the boards were used very limited. They reported limited usage of the whiteboards. Over time, I guess due to a lack of follow-up, the boards currently are no longer in the kiosks. So I wanted to put that out there. Now, we've gone through a lot over the past few years, needless to say, with COVID, lower ridership and everything, but there really has not been just a lot of follow-up on this particular project. So what I would like to ask the committee is, I'm sure some research happened 4 or 5 years ago. Does the committee still feel as though these boards could be effective today?
Well, I'll start off by saying that if people don't know they're available, they're not going to ask to use them. So there has to be some effort to educate the public to know that whiteboards are available should they need them. And then maybe more of them would be used if the riders or customers know that they're available.
Okay.
Any other feedback?
This is Anu, Chair Kalabia. Ms. Rush has her hand up. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
Denise, you're muted. Denise is muted.
There we go, Ms. Rush, go ahead.
This is Ms. Rush. In my mind, the whiteboards are just like smoke detectors. I've been in my home over 20 years. I've only had one fire. They're just there. The smoke detectors are there in case you need them. And the whiteboards are needed. They were purchased. They didn't grow legs. How did they walk away from the stations? I don't understand how they are, you know, a lot of stations don't have them any longer, but they're needed in case someone needs to communicate. No, there might not be a lot of people communicating or using them, but they should be available if needed.
Okay, well, I certainly appreciate that feedback. And Chair Calabio, what I'm going to propose that we do moving forward here, I need to sit down with Rail Transportation Management. I'm certain it will not be a problem of purchasing additional whiteboards. We will purchase, distribute them to the stations. We'll put together the formal announcement for staff. And these are the additional steps that probably should have been taken the last time. We would look to revise the station SOP regarding customer communication and customer service. We'd also work with the rail training department and get whiteboards incorporated into the station manager training program, as well as the refresher program. And then we would have our field supervisors monitor to ensure the whiteboards are there in the kiosk and ready for usage. As far as, there was also a question on the email that Anu sent me as far as the effectiveness. One of the most effective ways, from my experience in working with station operations, is to monitor customer complaint activity. So we could monitor any type of communication complaints on a monthly basis, and then maybe I could be a regular part of your meeting to make sure everything that I speak to is followed up on.
Mr. Bumbra, that's your response is really well-rounded and generous. I might add, though, that if whiteboards were somehow more visible at the kiosk, maybe customers would notice them and ask to use them.
Okay.
At the moment, they're, even if they were issued or were when they were around, they probably were not visible to people who might have wanted to use them. So making them visible in some way at the kiosk would help people understand they're there for use. So, but thank you for your well-rounded response and offer a follow-up. Really appreciate it. Any other comments? Yes, I see that.
Sheehan?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, Tino, you took a lot of my thunder, and it was well said. Sir, you gave us about 5 or 6 steps there that you said you were willing to do to make sure that these whiteboards get used, and I think that's great. So, just Tino, being able to have you come back and give us an update on how you're doing with this process, how long you think it might take to go through the 4 or 5 or 6 things that you stated, that would be great, because that's an area of outreach that I think is important. And I appreciate your efforts, sir, on coming up with a plan to communicate and get them back out into service. So I think that's great. Thank you very much for that. Good job, Tino. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. I have one last tidbit of information for the committee. There was some talk with the chief regarding new Fairgate designs. On Thursday morning, well, the team will actually be working to install a pilot Fairgate at the Fort Totten station. So if you'd like to see the new design of the new Fairgate barriers, they will be on display this Thursday at Fort Totten. They've also designed a new arch that they are going to install on all of the gates at Fort Totten to try to offset fare evasion.
Thank you for that. If you hadn't told us, I don't know how we would have known. Otherwise, the police chief didn't mention it. Is it possible to get a picture of it? A few of us, if maybe none of us, can easily get out to Fort Totten to see it. Okay. But can pictures of it be shared with the committee?
I actually requested pictures early today. Once I get them, I will send a copy.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Chair Calabia, I believe Carol is trying to make some comments, and then Doris has her hand up. So Carol, please go ahead.
I wanted to make this comment with the advisory committee and Mr. Bumbry in presence. We have also spoken to station managers in reference on how they communicate with people who are deaf. And just bluntly, most managers say, I take out my pencil and paper and I speak to them that way, or I use they talk to me with their phones and they push it and they show it to me. And they've told me that although they remember having those whiteboards, the whiteboards require a different type of pen that dries up, and they also requires an eraser. So it's kind of like having to have a chalkboard with an eraser, et cetera. So it's easier for them to have the paper and pen. That's some of the feedback that we have received in my office. And Mr. Calabia, you were going to be informed about the fare gates and the tests, et cetera. Right now, they are going to be on display, but I don't think they're going to be operational for people to use. They're just going to be there, and they're testing it for whenever you install something in our system. We have there's so many safety features that have to be tested, and this is just the first step. There's also going to be a pilot later on for customers to participate. So I just wanted to add that to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Doris?
Yes, the comments made by Carol lead right into what I was going to suggest. I suggest that as we look at the role of the whiteboards, we also consider what the deaf and significantly hard of hearing community are using right now in terms of personal communication, particularly people who are American Sign Language fluent as their first language. So the texting devices, the personal devices that people are carrying apparently appear to be the preference for many deaf people, at least, and or pen and paper is something that people have used for a long time. But the other thing I'm wondering about is, people aren't going to be able to use the whiteboards or anything else if kiosk personnel are not manning the kiosks themselves, which is where you have to support. And I agree with you that the whiteboards, if we keep them visible with some kind of sign to say what they are, so that whoever the deaf or hard of hearing patron is can use them. But when you come to a kiosk, you're worrying about getting to a train and blah, 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 and you have to wait 10, 15 minutes for the kiosk manager to come back. It's problematic. And the last thing I'll say is that perhaps there needs to be some update training, because I know many deaf people who are using devices or even might be using ASL, and there may be some difficulty in the translation if somebody texts something using ASL grammar and syntax, and it might be difficult for there to be a quick communication. So I'm suggesting that you contact the Northern Virginia Resource Center for Deaf and Hard of Hearing Persons and or people, and I think it's and or people at Gallaudet and in Washington and Maryland communities to see, you know, what they suggest and how to handle the situation.
Okay.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
Yep, certainly appreciate that.
So, Mr. Bumbrey, again, thank you very much. It was nice to meet you, and you're really wonderful in responding to us, and we look forward to hearing from you again soon. Thank you.
Really appreciate the opportunity. Everybody have a great evening.
You too.
Thank you, Paul. Chair Calabia, this is Anu. The next topic we have is a committee discussion about Fairgate's recommendations.
Yes. Carol, did you say that there are pictures available of the pilot Fairgate in Fort Totten? I'm sorry, Carol?
Sorry, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was mute. And I usually have a window in front of me and it's dark outside. You can barely see me. I look like a ghost. I see. Okay, so I have, we visited that this past week, and they weren't installed yet. They were just, it's just currently under construction, so we don't have photographs, but they're similar to one of the examples that Anu showed. It's they look like saloon doors. That's what they're going to look like. They're not on there. I mean, I haven't seen them in installed yet. They had started installation, but we don't have that. And then when they come up, we will take pictures and share them with you. But there's really that particular, I think that particular gate is not going to be available for people to test it just yet until WMATA figures all the safety features and everything.
Yes, well, as you know, a whole slew of new fare gates are in the process of being installed everywhere if they're not already installed. So if we were to install better fare gates in terms of preventing fare evasion, that's another example of spending money and then having to spend money to fix the situation.
Okay, this particular feature, this particular example that they're working on is using the same machines, except just changing the paddle mechanism.
And you said it's going to be like a saloon swing?
Yeah, it would be two doors that open. The ADA fare gate will be like two doors opening.
So they would be lower to the ground than the existing ones and higher up than the existing ones?
Yes.
In a fashion?
Yes. And the idea, and one of the things that we have discussed is that the top part would be clear so that you would see if somebody else is trying to use the fare gate, but the bottom part would be solid so that people with low vision will know that there is a gate there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of us brought this up several years back, and none of us is in the business of procurement of special equipment. It puzzles me why the procurement office of WMATA hadn't discovered better fare gates way back then, instead of, you know, the woman who came and had us listen to the sound of fare gates opening, and she came, she was very patient, and she was very generous for a time, and she, maybe three times, and then they had us even go and test it ourselves. You remember the Tweety Bird kind of thing that some of us thought was cute, if not silly? That there was a lot of effort that went into that. And what did we finally get? We got the new ones that are being installed, if they're not completely installed, which maybe have to be fixed in such a way that it's going to cost money, even if it's using the existing one. The procurement office needs to do a better job. I mean, it shouldn't be up to us by accident to find possible equipment that could be better serving of people with disabilities and seniors. It shouldn't be up to us as individuals. There's a procurement office. They should be looking at all the possibilities.
Well, these fare gates, I'm sorry, Tina, these fare gates that are being installed have all sorts of features that tell you when people are fare evading, etc. But as the chief said, the law changed, therefore people can jump and there are no consequences. So that's the difference between the then and now.
Well.
And if I could add, yes, Tina, this is Chris Blake. I was just listening because I saw your email the other night, and then you know when you never get back to it. I think you had mentioned that we should have fare gates. One of the ideas was if somebody jumps a fare gate, an alarm should go off. Well, that is in fact what we have. If you stand in a station and you watch somebody jump, or even if you're not watching, there is a feature that does alert people, the cops, the station managers, just regular passengers like myself, that somebody has evaded a fare. But there wasn't an enforcement mechanism at the time. Now Metro is handing out citations, and we hope that does reduce fare evasions. There are other systems, I know Chicago, that have these taller gates and whatnot, and maybe that's a future solution, but that's not what we have right now. And then just one last thing, and this is not about this particular procurement, this is really about all of them. Procurement really relies on the team. So I wouldn't put the blame on procurement. If you find fault with anything, you could put the blame on the team because procurement is really just making sure they follow the laws and the rules of spending the money. They are not the ones actually required to be the knowledge expert of each item or service that is being purchased. So we were looking at accessibility from our office standpoint. Our focus has always been accessibility. Others look at things like fare evasion and the bells and whistles for that. So just wanted to, in case my colleagues are listening or here, that I didn't defend them on the facts. I just wanted you to be aware that we're the experts. Procurement is the expert on the actual spending and issuance of contracts.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Christian. We've been dealing in the last few minutes on fare gates in metro stations. What about the problem on buses? The problem on buses is there may be more fare evasions going on buses than there are in metro stations. I don't know, but there certainly are a lot of fare evasions on buses, and bus operators are not police persons. They can't do anything. They have a button to push if somebody goes through without paying. And that's all we can ask of them. I mean, they're not qualified to enforce it, but just to notify. Then what happens? So we've spent some time talking about fare gates in stations. What are we doing about evasion on buses?
This is Anuchir Kalabia. We have four members with their hands up. In the order, Doris Ray, Kelly Seminole, Thomas Mangrum, and Tawan Farmer. So Doris, go ahead, please.
Yeah, a couple of things. The most recent comments that you made, Tino, I would like to kind of respond to, which is I see, and I ride the bus a lot, I see people try to evade, and I have seen drivers respond to that, but my impression is if it becomes something like they go and take a seat and won't get off, then they have the button they push, and it may in the end result in the cops coming to take the person off the bus and or everybody getting off the bus or both. So, I mean, that's what I see happening in the closer in suburbs like Arlington and Falls Church. But I think there are some answers on buses. And when the bus driver calls out to somebody saying they didn't pay, the whole bus hears it. So that gets back to the fare gates. I'm wondering whether the ones that we purchased or something that we can purchase or get some programming would actually have some kind of verbal and visible signal that tells everybody that's in the listening position of those fare gates that there is fare evasion going on. This gets back to the old idea. I don't know here about in Washington, but I do know when I was growing up in San Francisco, the police would be on the street, and if there was jaywalking from their perch, they had a loudspeaker saying, so-and-so, dressed like so-and-so, you're jaywalking, blah, 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 blah. Embarrassment goes a long way. And the last thing I want to say about the fare gates is it's been my experience with the recent new fare gates that despite the message signals they're sending you, frequently I've addressed a fare gate and it wouldn't let me through, and there was nothing in audible signals that told me that that actually I was trying to go through a fare gate that wasn't working in some way in that direction. It just didn't, there was nothing that was clear and evident to me about the sounds they were making that told me that the problem was not that I was short fare or something like that, but rather I was at a fare gate that wasn't operated in my. So that's what I wanted to.
Thanks, Doris. Next.
Can you go ahead?
Okay. Yeah, so I think it's the fare evasion question is, you know, obviously, I think a big concern for any mass transit system. But, you know, in the realm of like our advisory board, sometimes I feel like we're a little off topic on what really matters, to the extent that, you know, fare evasion is happening. And I think for WMATA, that's certainly a problem for, you know, like, but I think we need to look at perhaps more so in the term of how it has an adverse impact on persons with disabilities or the senior population. And so in my mind, really, it's not so much about like, what can we do to reduce fare evasion, or is this particular door preventing, or like gate preventing fare evasion? It's okay, if WMATA is modeling a new gate to evade fare evasion, are they still considering persons with disabilities, and is it going to make things more difficult? Another thing I think we should have our lens on perhaps instead is, you know, where the fare evasions are happening are most commonly in like places like Metro Center, in the places that are separate from the main entry points, which is for people who need accessibility and elevator access. And, you know, if that poses, you know, risk to persons with disabilities and the elderly. And finally, I think that you have to look at if fare evasion is causing more breakdown and wear and tear on those accessible gate stalls, to where, as Doris is mentioning, maybe you're going through, it's not working. And so I feel like, you know, for our advisory board, you know, thinking about how we can make sure that the issues that are affecting persons with disabilities are being at the forefront of the minds of the larger WMATA system as they're trying to tackle fare evasion.
If I could respond to Kelly, you know, safety and security are all connected. People who are prone to disobey the rules, be it fare evasion or shouting and jumping or threatening others or being a threat to others or perceived as a threat to others, this is all connected. And as I mentioned in the national statistics, people who are victims of crimes are disproportionately people with disabilities, and I would imagine also the elderly. And when people who willy-nilly just jump through fare gates or just run through past a bus operator, that mentality is suspect. And those people who are willing to do those things, who knows what else they'll do? They intimidated Doris. Yesterday, I sent you an email which quoted Mayor Bowser yesterday in the Post. And she talked about how people are discouraged on buses because of being threatened or terror. She used the word terrorized by teenagers. Now, if teenagers are terrorizing other people, they're certainly going to be terrorizing me, who can't get that away fast enough, or people with disabilities who are secured in a bus, it's all in the spectrum. And that's why what happens in terms of safety and security, whether it's fare evasion, teenagers terrorizing bus riders, the way they treated Thomas Mangrum several years ago on the bus, these things are all connected. We're not just in a book, a kind of box all by ourselves. We who are the elderly or people with disabilities, we're not just cut off in a box. We're part of a population that's interlocked and are affected by screaming teenagers or people who are that Thomas Mangrum finds threatening. This is all connected. So, and unfortunately, I didn't think to bring up with the police chief, but you know, when there are vagrants on subway station platforms or in subway cars or in buses, that's one thing if they're just kind of there by themselves and not bothering getting back. But sometimes those vagrants can get obstreperous and become threatening. So what happens, you know? Are they people with disabilities because they have a kind of mental disability? Or are they just vagrants who, you know, should be left alone if they leave us alone? So anyway, Kelly, we're not in a box separate from the rest of the population. What other people do who seems threatening to other people are also a threat to us. I see that Tuan Farmer and Thomas Rangram have their hands up. Tuan?
Thank you. In many ways, I kind of resonated with what Kelly said. I hear what you're saying. I do hear what you're saying, you know, and all of that is very much what I was kind of looking for. I needed to understand a little better. Now, do I think that this particular topic should be closer to the chief of police security? Yes, yes. I understand your reference to safety. But at times I'm looking, I'll be honest with you, and I'm relatively new to the committee, so I tend to be more observant than engaging initially, because I want to kind of understand the different components of what we do and how we engage as part of the Accessibility Advisory Committee and here in the subcommittees. I'm wondering, what is the, and this is based on some my own nature of what I do as far as my job, working in strategy and integration within the government. My question is, what is, and I'm using the term loosely, what is our end game? Is it to get this information to someone within WMATA who is going to improve the situation? How is it affecting persons with disabilities, the elderly community, and what's our goal? Because I don't want to feel like we're just, you know, kind of just talking in circles and we're not really getting any sense of resolution to the issue and how it's directly influencing persons who are riding the metro and the bus. Thomas's story was very real. I used to live on the X bus line. That can go from a very dangerous bus line to downtown Washington, which some people say, oh, that's not that bad. I'm like, no. You're going all the way from Chinatown, all the way from my job at Mesh Pearson Square, all the way out to Minnesota Avenue, and that is a very difficult situation. And I remember, and I'll end with this, a conversation I had at my job when we were talking about exiting a building in a dangerous situation. And I said, what happens here is persons with disabilities become collateral damage.
Yeah.
And they said, no, that's not real. We would never. I said, you never hope that you would never. But when it was time to run, that year that the earthquake happened and my desk vibrated, people ran from that building. And I'm like, you ran outside so the building would fall on you outside rather than it fall on you on top of you under your desk. But I said, persons with disabilities become collateral damage. And it's not pretty to say, but I'm like, okay. So that's all. I was just trying to kind of understand it a little better. I've gotten some insight from both, from different points of view. Both are valid to me, but it was a difficult thing to reconcile for, you know, while listening to the conversation.
Okay, but welcome to the bus rail subcommittee. Thomas?
Thank you for having me.
Thomas?
Yes. When it comes to the fare evasion on the buses that you asked about, since they got this new rule about strollers, they don't have to fold the strollers for the babies anymore on the bus. The bus driver have been letting people go on the back of the bus. So nobody's paying fare when they go on the back of the bus. And I don't know whether that's because the drivers are young now, but when I try to get on the bus in my wheelchair, the people don't want to wait until I get on the bus. So the bus driver sometimes tell them to go on the back of the bus, or somebody that's already on the bus that get off will hold open the door on the back of the bus for people to get on the back. So nobody's waiting for wheelchair users to get on the bus anymore. And the strollers, by them not having to fold them up, they losing fare for that also, because people getting on the back of the bus. That's all.
Are there any other questions about fare evasion, security, safety? If not,
Chair Calabia, no one else has their hand up at this point.
Well, we had skipped some steps at the early part because the chief was already with us.
Yes.
What is the remain? I can't see the.
I can state that we do, although we have gone through the agenda, but we did not have the motion of approval as well as the meeting minutes from last month.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the approval of
the meeting minutes from last month.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And although we have gone through the agenda, we did not approve it.
The agenda's already good.
Yes. Okay. That's what I'm saying. We are pretty much done with it. So those were the two things. Yes.
Well, just for the record, do you want us to review the agenda and act on it? No. Okay. With respect to the minutes, the draft minutes of the prior bus rail subcommittee meeting, basically, we talked about escalators and elevators, and there was an update on that, and in particular regarding lighting. And in fact, I recall that Sandy Newsel had asked if she could get a list of the escalators, which indicate whether they have too much lighting or too little lighting, or if they were okay. I don't know if anyone recalls the fact that she asked for that, but is it still possible to get that? Anyway, the other item that was on the agenda in October's Bus Rail Subcommittee, we heard from the people dealing with the Better Bus Network redesign, and they talked about this early part of the process, the surveys. And as I mentioned last week, the survey deadline was Friday. So I hope that people got their survey in. Now, obviously, not all members of the committee regularly or at all use buses, but hopefully they might have asked the bus users that they know to take it. Anyway, that was an important part of the presentation about the Better Bus Network redesign, which is to get a feel for how users currently view the way buses operate, where they operate, how they operate, whether they're on time or that sort of thing. And at the time, I didn't know that there, when I went to a station to hand out literature, someone asked me if they filled out the survey, is there just one smart trip card that is being raffled to those who complete it? Well, I have since found out that there are five that have been, that are up for raffling. And last I heard, there were about 3,000 surveys that were completed, and that was maybe a week or 10 days ago. So hopefully it's much more than that by now. The other thing that we talked about was the elections. And in the course of last month, we completed the process regarding elections. So basically that was what was designed, talked about in the minutes. And you've all had a chance to review the draft minutes that Anu prepared. And if you have no problems with the minutes, then I ask for a motion to approve the minutes. Is there a motion to do so?
I motion for it, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas. Is there a second to the motion?
I second.
All in favor of approving October's Bus Rail Subcommittee minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved. Now.
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. I see Vanessa has her hand up, and at 5:45, we should time for our public comments section. I believe we have a member of the public for public comments.
Okay, Vanessa.
Just real quick, and my question is regarding security, and I don't know if there's anyone still on the line to answer, but I wanted to know, a while back, well, not too long ago, there was an incident on a bus where one of the customers was asking one of the young people to lower their noise. So I don't know what the bus driver did, but it sounded like to me they just continued to drive. Whatever happened, or has that been resolved, or what the procedure should have been for the bus driver?
Is there anyone still online who can address that question?
This is Anu, Chair Calabria. Vanessa, I'm sorry, I could not hear the first portion of your comment or question, but we do not. If you can repeat it, that will be wonderful so that we have it for the record. But we do not have anyone from bus. We can surely follow up on your question with bus division, with bus divisions, and provide you with a response next time.
Anu, the chief in his presentation mentioned that the perpetrators involved have all been arrested. And the investigation as to procedure is being going on by the bus division. So that's what the chief said earlier in his presentation to us, if Vanessa was listening.
I Vanessa, you weren't referring to that specific incident, were you?
No.
Well, I was, and I just wanted to know what the what was the driver's, because from what I heard, I've heard everything, he just continued to drive the vehicle while all that ruckus was going on and they were trying to pull the lady off the bus. I mean, what did the driver do, or what was the procedure for the driver?
Well, my comment would be that drivers are not enforcers of policies, and certainly not qualified to interfere in altercations.
Oh, no, not at all. But was there some kind of button he could have called, or could have called the police? I mean, no, I would not expect, because he's driving, I would not expect the driver to, or to pull over and stop. I just don't know.
This is, I know, and Vanessa, just to reiterate what the chief was saying earlier, that operators do have a mechanism to press a button and call for help. They may not announce that, but that is something that they can do. In the interest of time, it is 5:46, and I believe, Chair Calabia, I believe we do have a member of the public who would like to make some comments. Do see Doris Ray has her hand up. So Doris, with time permitting, we can come back to your question. And Thomas, if you're trying to make some comments, we can do so after our member of the public has had a chance to make comments.
Sure.
I see someone with a DPAS map. If you'd like to come off of mute, you would have 3 minutes to make your comments, and I would start the timer when you start speaking.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, everyone, and thanks for having me at your meeting. It has been really interesting, and I'm hoping to be a regular attendee. I am a Ward 1 resident who uses the bus quite often and have run into some issues myself as a parent with the ban on open strollers. And I had to leave the meeting for a minute, but I heard a conversation around that not being the case anymore. And so I'd love a little more information on that. I know there was supposed to be a pilot was announced or discussed in this group in 2019 that was supposed to start in 2020. So if I could get some more information on where WMATA is heading in terms of supporting families, mobility through the city, that would be great. Thank you.
This is Carol Lopez. I'd like to let you know that that pilot has been in place for a while, and WMATA is still discussing it now. And we will have some updates in the very near future. And I believe that everyone is allowing an open stroller in the buses now, but it was supposed to be only on a pilot route. But I believe, have you used that recently, and has somebody stopped you from using an open stroller?
Thank you for your response. No, my children are fully ambulatory and do not use strollers at this time. I just want to back up. Yeah, I have seen people who have been led on with
what you
call open strollers. I think I call them encumbered strollers because there's actually people in them. And I guess, I mean, I don't know anybody who's known that there was a stated policy, whether it be a pilot or temporary or whatever, to allow encumbered strollers. If you do a web search for it, you can't find anything. So how have you communicated this to the public, curiously?
Okay, it will be communicated in the near future. Right now, it's still as unofficially as a pilot.
Okay, thank you. But it sounds like you're moving towards changing the policy. Is that correct?
It's a discussion.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So are there any other members of the public, Anu?
I would say, Chair Kala, sorry, this is Anu. I would ask if there are any other members of the public to please let us know if you would like to make some comments. I also want to share how anyone willing, needing to send their comments can do so. We can receive an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com. That's metroaacchair@wmata.com, or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. So that was my announcement for public comments. I believe Doris,
is the ombudsman report.
Okay, can you hear
me? I'm sorry, Ms. Roche.
I said, are we going to hear an ombudsman report?
Actually, Ms. Rush, I believe we did not have any topic from last month to be included in the ombudsman report.
I can speak if you'd like.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, well, Deirdre. I would like to just thank everybody for the communication that's been given so far. And as the new ombudsman, I want to say that our goal is to make the system, that would be bus, rail, and paratransit, better and safer for all riders with disabilities. And we definitely welcome the communication because, of course, we can't read everybody's minds. And we definitely, all the different communication would be investigated. And the more detail that you can provide, obviously the better. Just in case you don't know, each bus has a number on it. It's usually above the windshield or outside of the bus. And each rail car has a number outside and inside too, I believe. And I'm not sure about the paratransit vehicles. But if you could let us know, please, the time that the incident happened, that would really, really help. As the chief had said, that there's cameras in all the vehicles, so both sides of the story would be considered if a communication is brought forward to Metro. So, of course, you don't have to wait for AAC, BRS, or MAC meeting to communicate. You can call 202-962-1100, and that information will be passed along, a lot of it to me. We also cover the Metro shuttles, too, if you have anything you'd like to communicate about that. And just to remember, I was sitting in your shoes as a member of the public for many, many years until very recently. And I ride bus and rail and paratransit. So I get what's going on. I commit to you that I will try to address it. And if not, I can give a good reason. And so, please communicate with us.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara. That's excellent information. And we can also receive information via email. Just to add one more point, at access@vomata.com. Chair Calabria, Doris has her hand up. I believe she's trying to make some comments. Doris, go ahead.
Doris?
Yeah, I'm here. What I wanted to comment on is Vanessa's questions. I think that this raises, what I understand is that the labor contracts for the bus drivers and even for employees in stations and train operators, that they are supposed to step aside if an incident happens that would involve calling the police. They're supposed to call the police and then, or their supervisors, and then the police, and then step away. And with regard to the incident that happened on the Metro bus, I think we do have potential ADA issue to look at. How do we work with something where an individual is a direct threat to themselves or other bus riders, for example, in the case of a bus? Because recently I look at how that applies to any intervention by a driver, particularly in a bus situation, is recently I was in a situation where there was somebody on the bus and the driver asked him to leave. That was a packed Route 7 bus, and the person would not leave. And so the bus driver called in and had to wait for the supervisor to say, call the police or whatever, and then called the police. And we must have been on there 20 or 30 minutes before we were told that we had to get off because the police were on the way. And I got to say, I was in terror. I was afraid, really afraid. And I think that it needs to be reviewed and looked at both from a safety and public, police enforcement issues, as well as, and the contracts, labor contracts, as well as the issue of simply getting passengers off and to safety if the driver is really concerned that it's so important they need to call in and they need to call the police. But eventually we did have to get off the bus and wait for a new bus. So I think it is an issue that we might want to frame somehow and explore, because also the person involved apparently did have a disability, a mental health disability. So. The person who refused to get off, just to clarify.
Oh, my. Any comments?
Chair Calabria, this is Zeno. I do not see anyone else's hand up at this point.
Okay. If there is no one else, member of the public, I guess we're about to adjourn. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Anyone? A motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
A second?
A second.
Eyes, please. Eyes.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Hearing no objections, this meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for your attendance and participation. Thank you.